You know, when you see two co-CEOs ringing the bell at the stock exchange after this massive, unprecedented merger, you just assume they're in perfect lockstep.
Right. They look completely, totally in sync.
Exactly. But then you check in a few years later, and sometimes they're just screaming at each other in the boardroom while the company's stock is in absolute freefall.
While everything burns down around them, yeah.
Yeah. So today on this deep dive, we're looking at the ultimate geopolitical version of that, the absolute roller coaster relationship between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu.
It's quite the story.
It really is. And look, just as a quick heads up for you listening, we're dealing with some highly charged geopolitical sources today.
Very charged.
Right. So our goal here isn't to take sides or endorse anything, but just to impartially pull back the curtain on the facts they present. We want to see how these two leaders went from orchestrating historic Middle East treaties to, you know, expletive-filled shouting matches.
Exactly. I mean, it's a masterclass in how quickly an unbreakable visionary partnership can just completely unravel.
Right, because they really did start out like those triumphant co-CEOs.
Yeah.
If you look at their early partnership, they were completely aligned.
Oh, absolutely.
They were expanding the Abraham Accords, and they had just rolled out that massive Gaza peace plan back in October 2025. It looked like total victory.
It was a huge undertaking. I mean, Trump's 20-point plan involved a hostage exchange, and critically, it involved the IDF withdrawing to a designated yellow line.
Which essentially meant pulling Israeli troops back to a heavily fortified perimeter.
Right.
Like a buffer zone rather than occupying the interior.
Exactly, to create that buffer. And then the plan was to hand Gaza over to a new government.
Right, like a technocratic Palestinian government.
Yeah, overseen by an international board. Meaning, instead of political factions running the show, it would be run by appointed subject matter experts. So, you know, engineers, economists, administrators to rebuild the infrastructure.
Right.
Yeah. And what's fascinating here is how that tight bond was initially forged to make all this happen. Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, actually used his deep personal and business ties in the region to bypass traditional diplomacy.
Just going straight to the top.
Right. He cemented this trust directly with Netanyahu.
But, you know, just like in the corporate world, one terrible acquisition can blow up the entire partnership.
Definitely.
And for them, that was the February 2026 U.S.-Israeli assault on Iran. Netanyahu basically pitched it to Trump as a quick win.
Oh, he did, yeah. Netanyahu convinced Trump it would be this painless regime change. He explicitly used the recent U.S. intervention in Venezuela as his blueprint.
The one that ousted Maduro.
Right. The logic was basically, well, the Iranian economy is in shambles, just like Venezuela's was. So we kick the door in and the whole structure collapses in 3 or 4 days.
Wait, but how could Trump just ignore the military realities?
Yeah.
I mean, multiple reports in our sources say U.S. intelligence explicitly warned them that Iran could close the Strait of Hormuz. Did they just bury their heads in the sand?
It's classic hubris. I mean, they really believed the regime would fall before Iran could even react to the strikes.
But the regime didn't fall.
No, it didn't. And Iran immediately mined the Strait of Hormuz, which, remember, roughly 20% of the world's oil flows through that narrow 21-mile choke point.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So closing it instantly triggered a global economic crisis.
Which is exactly what Trump did not want right before his May 2026 trip to Beijing to meet Xi Jinping.
Precisely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Trump felt led into a trap. He was about to enter these critical economic talks with China, but now he's barked down in a fresh Middle East war with global oil markets just panicking.
So he loses all his negotiating leverage.
All of it, yeah.
So because Trump was so desperate to clean up that economic mess before Beijing, he forces this delicate ceasefire with Iran. But that fragile peace was immediately shattered.
Right, by Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Just as the ceasefire is taking hold, Netanyahu orders the resumption of bombing in Beirut's southern suburbs in Lebanon.
Which obviously threatened to drag Iran right back into the conflict and completely tank the truce.
Exactly.
Which leads us to the boiling point. According to our sources, Trump got on the phone and completely lost it. He was shouting at Netanyahu, calling him, quote, thing crazy, and claiming he was the only one saving the prime minister from prison.
It was intense.
He even went on social media to publicly declare Israel was prohibited from bombing Lebanon.
Yet, despite this intense hostility, they are totally stuck with each other. I mean, their shared strategic failures mean their political fates are permanently glued together.
Right, because if Trump openly admits his frustration,
he has to admit he was conned into a disastrous war.
Exactly. You know, when you look at this whole timeline, it's a stark reminder to you listening that the gas prices we pay or the global stability we rely on aren't just shaped by abstract policies.
No, they're dictated by deeply personal relationships and, frankly, the egos of the people in charge.
It really shows how fragile international alliances can be when they're built on personal chemistry rather than, you know, actual institutional guardrails.
Absolutely.
Which leaves you with this final thought to ponder. If personal ego and backdoor friendships are the primary drivers of modern global policy, are traditional diplomats and intelligence agencies becoming completely obsolete? Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.